Hey guys, and welcome to episode 115 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now in this episode, I got on my good friend Margaret Sisson. So I had the pleasure of meeting Margaret in Denver recently, and Margaret founded Riley'sWish.com. Riley's Wish is a foundation helping people with OCD and addiction. Margaret started it when her son passed away, whose name is Riley. So the charity was named after him in honor and memory to kind of keep furthering the message that addiction is fairly widespread among people with mental health, and there shouldn't be as much stigma around it. So we get into that as well. So it's been a pleasure getting to know Margaret. She's an awesome lady, and just who she is shines through in the foundation. So some of the things we talk about is kind of what don't people know about OCD and addiction together? Where can clinicians respond better to someone with OCD and addiction? If someone has OCD and addiction, what might their first step be? What support systems are in place for those people? Advice for anyone living with an addiction and OCD. Advice for family members on how they can support their loved one and support themselves. Why Margaret started Riley's Wish. What Margaret hopes to achieve from Riley's Wish, the aims, the goals, and how people can support the foundation. And then obviously I asked Margaret the usual questions at the end, but I think this was a very heartfelt, and at least for me, a very inspiring conversation. And I think, you know, there is a lot of stigma around mental health generally, but when you throw addiction in the mix, that still has a lot of negative stigma around it. And unfortunately, that gets in the way of people seeking treatment and sometimes when they're even getting it. So I hope this starts to break down the walls of that negative view of addiction and can help people. So without further ado, here is Margaret. On today's show, I have Margaret Sisson. Margaret founded the charity Riley's Wish, which helps sufferers of OCD and addiction. The charity was started in honour and memory of her son, Riley, who was a passionate advocate for people with OCD and addiction. Welcome to the show, Margaret.
Thank you, Stuart.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Obviously, I got to know you in Denver at Chrissy's event, the OCD Game Changers, and it was a real honour to get to know you. I really like who you are and what you're doing with Riley's Wish.
Thank you. I've heard about your and watched many of your podcasts and have been all very impressed, but got to see you and then get to know you on a personal basis. And we all did our hikes and dinners, and that was pretty special.
Yeah, that was awesome. Cool. No, thank you. What I usually do is get people to share their OCD story, or if they're a therapist, you know, why they treat OCD. But it'd be good to hear, you know, why you're involved with OCD.
Okay. Well, I started, my son Riley was diagnosed at 12 with OCD. And diagnosed, I say, but not, no one really told us where to go. So we started on that journey of trying to find therapy, and most of it was talk therapy, which, as you know, doesn't help with somebody with OCD. So not until he was a senior in high school did we finally find somebody who used ERP, and that was what helped him get a little bit better. And to get him off to college, because he was very adamant and determined that he wasn't going to let OCD control him, and he was going to go to college. And he wanted to go play football for college, which he was asked to do. So that's where we started. But in the meantime, his OCD was very, very bad in that we used somebody, but it wasn't on a regular because they were an hour and a half away from us. So, you know, it wasn't on a regular basis that he was able to do therapy. And so when he went off to college, he found drinking, which I'm sure that many, I know by a fact that many young people will self-medicate for whatever reason. And that's what he did. Because when he drank, those thoughts went away. So once that began, then it became that vicious cycle of treating OCD and treating addiction. And whenever he would get to a OCD treatment facility, they would treat him for the OCD, but, and which the ERP was, as you know, is very stressful. And when his stress would get up, then they would give him Klonopin, which would send his brain into the addictive craving. And then it became a nightmare and he got kicked out on actually two facilities because of the addiction. And it became a, and that was a real stigma that even the OCD world would, you know, from these facilities, oh, well, you're kicked out, you can't. And so each, it made him feel so horrible about himself. And so he didn't feel like he was ever going to be able to get well because he couldn't, no one would treat the OCD and the addiction together. So that became kind of a vicious cycle. He would get, he would be in recovery with his substance abuse. And those would be sometimes, you know, a year to 2 year periods. And then his OCD would get bad. And then it became that vicious cycle when he'd relapse. And which September 1, he lost him of an accidental overdose. And so that became my involvement in OCD, that I hoped that no family would have to go through what I did, and nobody that struggled with OCD and substance abuse would have to go through what Riley did.
Yeah. Okay. No, thank you for going into that. I know it's a tough story to share. But I appreciate it, and I'm sure my listeners do, and it's useful for them. Okay, so yeah, I guess, you know, the thing that strikes me about that is, I could be making assumptions here, but it assumes that, as you said, there was stigma around addiction even within the OCD community, and potentially, I'm sure that stigma led to him not getting the right treatment as and when needed. Do you feel it could have been handled any better? Or no, that's maybe not a helpful question. Going forward, what can clinicians do to kind of respond better to people who have both, obviously, OCD and then self-medicating?
That's a very good question, Stuart, because I don't blame. I think it's not being educated about addiction.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, if you choose thinking that someone with OCD is not going to self-medicate, then you need not be in that profession because, you know, our numbers are increasing. And now people are saying, I struggle with addiction too. So self-medication is happening, I mean, certainly a lot more than we know. So my thought is if clinicians are educated on substance abuse and OCD, because so many times that dual diagnosis is going to go together, and set up your facilities to have a addiction substance abuse counselor on staff that knows both, and then I think you can treat both. I mean, now because there is a facility outside Chicago, Patrick McGrath started, that treat OCD and addiction at the same time. And people are coming out, getting help. So I know it can be done. Back then, I don't think people understood. And I think addiction had a stigma. Just like mental health has a stigma, addiction has a stigma.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's interesting. I agree. And I think it kind of sounds like to me just that initial step is awareness, I guess, from the community and clinicians to almost accept that addiction is so widespread and it's maybe underreported, it's not as well known, because obviously there's a lot of I'm assuming personal shame from the sufferer. They don't want to talk about it because, you know, I guess sometimes addiction can be seen more of a weakness than mental illness, which is a shame because I don't think it is. So I guess maybe if obviously the work you're doing, you're breaking down the walls of stigma around addiction. And I'm sure that's going to make a huge positive impact. So maybe it's, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know where I'm going with this. But
Well, you're right. I mean, yeah. I think, because I think people, as a society, people misunderstand how someone's brain works who is struggling with addiction. And if our clinicians and researchers would study more that, I think it would be more, we could help more people, because there is a difference in how it's not just people choosing. Do you think Riley wanted to do that? No, not at all. It gave him so much guilt and shame, and he felt horrible. But if people understood the brain and how it works in someone who's struggling with addiction, I think it would be a much more, positive in their, in how people could help them.
I agree. And I think, I mean, obviously, like, depression is often very common alongside OCD, but most therapists that can treat OCD can treat depression as well, because they get trained. It's a different skill set, but they get trained usually to treat those things together. But with addiction, it's less so. So hopefully it's just a matter of getting more training in the colleges and universities. So when people are learning how to treat depression, PTSD, OCD, they're also getting treated addiction, about how to treat addiction.
Right.
I'm sure it's going to change, and absolutely the work you're doing is going to make a huge impact in that. Okay, so you know, you kind of answered it there. My next question about basically the question is, what don't people know about OCD and addiction together? And I guess one way to answer that is that addiction's way more common than we realize. Is there any other answer to it?
And it's way more complex than people think. And that's why I think, you know, if you are going to be a clinician, be honest, whether it be OCD, bipolar, depression, you need to be educated about substance abuse too, because I will guarantee a large number of your clients will struggle with addiction too.
Absolutely, and I think, and I guess maybe it's us worth defining what addiction is, because I think it's same as like mental illness used to be seen, it still is in some parts of society, but it used to be seen as kind of the straitjacket asylum type image. At least as a kid, that's what I had in my head. And addiction, especially the first thing that comes to addiction, even now, even though I know it's not true, is, you know, the heroin addict on the street, kind of homeless.
Right.
And addiction, you can be fully functional and have an addiction.
Doesn't mean you're not struggling. The number of college kids from good families who are struggling with addiction.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, why I say in my talk at Denver, or most always I say, it could be your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, your cousin, or it could be you. It's everywhere. And if you think you're not going to see it, that's not true, because someone in your life will be affected by it, and it's not the homeless person, which we need to help too, but it's everybody.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in my own life, there was someone I had in my own life who was addicted to alcohol, and thankfully he's kind of kicking it to the curb now, but you know, he struggled for many years and you could see his life going on a downward trajectory.
Right.
And it's little by little. At first you wouldn't think there's any problem with him. It's only to the people who were very close to him that knew anything was going wrong.
And you'd look at Riley and for OCD too, although he had outward compulsions, he was called a classic checker. So he had outward compulsions that were, you know, at times just grueling, and people saw that.
Yeah.
But, you know, as a college student, it's very easy to blend in with everybody that's drinking. And like I say, Riley didn't drink to be social. Riley drank to forget, to
numb,
get rid of those thoughts. So I think a lot of people that happens. And because he had became, and what is the, you know, egg before the chicken, he became an addict or an alcoholic, to where his brain was different. And when you gave him something that clicked that brain into those cravings, he couldn't stop. And now there are drugs out there that cut those cravings. And so that helps with treatment. Just like if you were a diabetic or you needed something to help you. There are now drugs. There weren't when Ryan, we were never educated about that. I have learned that since. So
that's, I wasn't aware of that. That's interesting to hear. So let's say someone's listening now and they have OCD and they're addicted to something as well. Maybe a tough question, but what should their first step be to recovery?
Seek help. Seek help immediately. And I mean, there's different programs. Some people, AA is a great program for them, but that's a support. That's the support part of it. But there are doctors that treat people struggling with addiction. So that might be where you have, you know, you get medication that helps those cravings. So there is help. And kind of depends on what, you know, like I say, AA is a great program. I think that's more of a support. It's obviously not going to, and you might need medication, just like with OCD. You get therapy, you might, you know, and some people need medication. That's exactly how I think it is with addiction. It's not how strong your willpower is. I don't believe that, because Riley had the strongest willpower, I think, of anybody I knew, and worked harder than anybody and wanted to be in recovery more than anybody. So I know that his brain functioned different from somebody who was not struggling with addiction.
Yeah. Yeah, and I agree. And I think, as you said, like everyone that I've spoken to that speaks about Riley, you know, it always come across that he was, you know, he had willpower, that he was proactive, but addiction's addiction and it overrides willpower,
right,
unfortunately. Right. So, okay, so next kind of question on that is, you mentioned AA. What other kind of support systems are there for someone with addiction and OCD?
And you know, I mean, Riley did AA. I mean, I think, you know, whether it be counseling, I think, you know, maybe talk therapy, mindfulness, all those I think would also help for someone who struggles with addiction. Being, you know, in the day, in the moment, for someone who's addiction, because a lot of times they try to think ahead and, you know, either the next high or what is going to happen with my life. So I think all those, that could certainly help somebody with an addiction problem. And then there are facilities, you know, that will help somebody who's struggling with addiction, you know, helping them get clean and helping them with support groups. And, you know, there are many facilities, and just like there, I mean, there's not many facilities for OCD, but kind of the same concept.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Good advice. And I think also the thing that hit me was about, you know, we were talking about stigma at the start, and I guess it's kind of just speaking to anyone, even if you're in treatment, still the ability to share your, you know, knowing that you can call someone up, kind of like in AA, they have the sponsor system. You know, if let's say you're not in AA or don't want to get there, whatever reason, you know, have a friend. And if maybe if your friends or family aren't supportive, then maybe it's time to get new friends. But, you know, you can find groups on Facebook and stuff where there are people going through similar to you, and it's still something to open up and share.
Yeah, I think you need support. And sometimes when in addiction, sometimes you have to change your friends because being with somebody and that's hard, especially, you know, you think of these young college kids, you know, they're going to college and they, you know, have a group of friends, whether, you know, they have a fraternity, sorority. But if you look at most colleges, that's what's rampant is the drinking. And and I'm a huge, and this might come into another question, but I'm a huge component on these collegiate recovery programs, where it's a support group. It's a support in all different ways. They help, you know, a young person with school. They help them with jobs. They help them get through school. They offer AA. They offer NA. They offer all different supports for somebody who wants to finish school and struggles with addiction. They might live in a dorm. They have dorms now that are substance free. And so you don't have to be next to your roommate who has, you know, who's drinking and partying.
Yeah.
And so that becomes your support group.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. How widespread is that now among American colleges?
Well, it's interesting. When I started, I read about it in the New York Times, and there were three collegiate recovery programs. Mm. And one was in Georgia, which was amazing. So that's how Riley, that was at Kennesaw State, and they have a great model. And now there are about 125 programs, which is great, although you look at how many colleges we have in the United States.
Yeah.
So that's kind of one of my goals as I go forward is to I'm very fortunate to have Teresa Johnson, who is the director of the Collegiate Recovery Program here in Georgia. And we're working on going out to different colleges that don't offer this program. And so they'd be able to set it up so college kids would have a support within a college that would help them.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And we'll get into that more later, actually, because that sounds really good. But I know I mean, a large part of my audience is the US, but I do have a global audience. So I guess anyone else listening, it's worth contacting your university, college, whatever it is, and asking about, see if they have one of these programs. And if they don't, most universities usually have counselors who will be familiar with addiction.
Yes. Well, we, you know, we went through that when Riley started as a freshman, and the counseling knew nothing about OCD.
Oh, okay.
And went through the same, you know, when he was stuck in the office trying to check, you know, they were like, whoa, they didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, that became, and then they just kind of, you know, everybody's kind of drinking, so be safe, be, you know, that was kind of how the philosophy was. You know, don't drive. And, but someone that's, you know, And so it was easy for Riley to fit right in with that. But counseling on, you know, I think every college should have counselors for addiction and mental health. And that's what I'd like to do, like these recovery programs, be recovery in addiction and also mental health.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's a noble pursuit. Okay, so this is more of a general question now. So just, I guess, you know, if someone came to you and said they had OCD and they were addicted to something, what kind of words of wisdom would you have for them or advice?
I would tell them there is hope, you can get help, and if be honest with your counselor or your clinician, and if they don't understand and they don't understand addiction, then you need to find somebody else. Because I think that's super important. And that's why I just think it's so important that all our OCD clinicians are educated with about addiction. And if you are struggling with OCD and addiction, I ask these therapists, please don't send them away. Please try to treat them. Because that's what happened. If they were, when Riley with any addiction, no one would treat them, would treat him at the same time. And you know what? I don't agree with that. I think they need to be educated in both.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, recovery is messy, and hoping that one's going to go away or they're somehow going to be able to treat one first
isn't
realistic.
Right, and if you ignore one, no. Just like if someone's treating addiction, now they're not going to be probably as educated about OCD, but hopefully they're smart enough to say, you know, if you are dealing with OCD, then you do dual counseling, and those two counselors work together.
Yeah.
But it always came that, well, I'm not going to treat you because you're not, you need to be in recovery. Well, as they would put, you need to be clean for 30 days. So I won't treat you until that happens. Wow. That's hard.
Yeah.
Because your OCD is at a 10, but I can't treat you until you are clean for 30 days. And some were 90. Some said 90. So,
wow.
And as you know, one day of struggling with OCD is tough.
Yeah. And just one day without giving up your addiction is incredibly hard. The drive to do whatever you're addicted to is unimaginable. This is a silly example, but I was spending way too much time watching Netflix recently, sort of 4 hours an evening, where it was affecting me, and I quit that. And the day I quit it, that night I was home alone. It was on a Friday night, and the drive for me to want to watch TV, and this isn't a drug, this isn't alcohol, but the drive was so real that I felt sad that I couldn't watch it. I felt frustrated and irritated, and that was just TV. You imagine if it was cocaine or some addictive prescription.
Exactly, because because there with a drug is changing your brain. Mm. Your brain is, and so fight that.
Yeah, it's tough.
And then have somebody say, "Ah, sorry, I'm not going to treat you."
Yeah, it's a tough one. But I think your message of they need to find a way, they need to try and treat them is an important one. I think we all as clinicians need to hear. Because, recovery. And even if you can't support someone with addiction, you know, hopefully someone in your clinic is an expert in addiction and they can work alongside you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And just say, you know what, we'll find you help. Not, oh, I can't treat you because you've got... Say, you know what, you're struggling with this, we're going to find you help.
Yeah.
And have resources for someone.
Yeah. Problem solving. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we teach that to clients. We need to do it ourselves. Okay, so what advice do you have for family members? You know, whether that's a sibling, parent, cousin, friend, etc., on how they can support their loved one with OCD and addiction.
Super important, and because it's a hard journey when you go on a journey with somebody with OCD and addiction, and there's a lot of things that are really really tough. So you definitely need support, and there are like Al-Anon and Alateen, if that's something that you know, that would be helpful. That's a great support for a family member. There aren't your own counseling. Be able to have somebody that you can lean on and ask questions. You know, how do I do this? You know, this is what's happening. What do I do? So a family member, whether it be a parent or brother, sister, needs that support just as much.
Yeah.
Because if you have support and you're strong, then you can help that person even more. But you get tired and you get worn out and it's hard and you don't understand, then that, you know, it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. This may be a bit of a naive question, but is it important, and how important, if so, is it to kind of keep normality in the family while this is going on, in terms of routine and having fun together, etc.?
Absolutely, that is an important factor, because it affects the whole family. It affects the core of the family, and it affects relationships between parents, siblings. You know, do you have someone that enables? That makes it hard. So to keep a normal and still, you know what, if you're struggling, if a family is struggling with somebody with addiction, OCD, you're probably not going to have that quote normal,
because
it's not, it's hard. It is just hard. And that's all I can say. But the more a family member is supported and the more there's communication within the family, makes it easier or better.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you for that. We're now going to get on to Riley's Wish to charity. So obviously we've roughly discussed how it was started. I guess, you know, why is it called Riley's Wish?
Well, and right after I lost Riley, it probably started in my desperation. That's what a parent does. How do I keep his name alive? What do I do? You know, I kind of made a choice that morning saying, I can either do nothing or... because I can't change what happened, or I can do something, and will that keep Riley's name alive, and I can help other people. So that was kind of my personal decision.
Yeah.
And that wasn't always easy. I'm not saying that that was like easy, but with Riley's Wish, Riley always, he always was teaching me things, and he always had, you know, his wish was to help other people. You know, he'd started his master's degree in counseling. And I knew that that was his dream, was to help other people. So when I came up with Riley's Wish, I just thought that would be his wish for us to continue helping others. So that's how I came up with it.
No, I think it's a great name. And I think, you know, like I said, I never met him, but getting to know him through you and for Chrissy and everyone else, I think it really encapsulates who he was as a passionate advocate, for wanting to help people. So I think it's a good job.
Yeah.
So You know, you've started mentioning it about going into the universities and stuff, but what are some of the core aims and goals of Riley's Wish?
Well, that's one of my big, we've started Riley's Wish lecture series, which is a series over 4 years that we've set up, and we had our first one, and we're implementing colleges. That's who I'm trying to target, is the college recovery programs, and any college, and to teach them about, educate and raise awareness about OCD, mental health, and substance abuse. So I was fortunate to have some really fabulous speakers come. We had it in September, end of September. So we'll do it again. And that's my goal, is to have as many colleges. And then now it's right, it's in Georgia. We're, but my goal would be to take it to other states and have, you know, how many colleges are within a state is, you know, incredible, whether they be smaller universities or state schools. So, or private schools, would love them all to be involved. And that gets the counseling at a school. And now, unfortunately, with this, the opiate crisis and everything that's going on, colleges are much more aware. It used to be just kind of, that's what happened, is, you know, kids drink and they take drugs and, you know. But now we're losing young people every day. So I think they're a little more wary and aware of what's happening. So I'm hoping that we can add these programs so we can help and save lives.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. And if, so obviously one of the easiest ways to get to other states and one of the cheapest would be through, you know, video conferencing, whether that's Skype or some other technology. Is that something you'd be up for if colleges from different states contacted you and asked you to kind of video in? Is that something you'd do?
Oh, yes. I think that would, you know, that would be, I think that would be easier, you know, rather than actually setting it up, but, or going to an actual college. I think that could certainly be a possibility.
Cool. Yeah, put it out there. So any college deans listening, contact Margaret.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, we'd love to. Please email me. Love to set that up.
Awesome. And also, you've got the conference scholarship in Riley's name at the ISDF. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, it's the Riley Sisson Memorial Conference Scholarship that helps people in need have a chance to be able to go to the IOCDF conference. The conference for Riley was life-changing. It was life-changing for me too. When you walk the first time, when you go somewhere and you've been so alone and you thought you were the only one with OCD, and you think you're the only mom that deals with somebody with OCD, and here are all these people that understand you and support you. That's a pretty neat feeling. So I, that's why I started the scholarship, thinking the more people that could have that opportunity like we did to have, and I haven't missed a conference since the very first one Riley and I went to. And fortunately now we have, because no one talked about OCD and substance abuse, now we have a whole mini track and we have a special interest group on OCD and addiction. So things are changing, which is pretty neat.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's good that the ISDF conference has that now. And I kind of mirror your sentiments there. Like when you go and, you know, everyone you speak to, they, you know, you open your mouth sharing something and they're just like, they 100% get it. And it's, there's other place on this earth that I've been to that you just feel so connected and understood.
Right. And that's exactly what Riley said. I've never been somewhere where I felt I could say to anybody, you know, this is what I'm dealing with, OCD, and they get it.
Yeah.
And there's a doctor and there's a therapist and there's you know, the top doctors, the top therapists are standing in the hall with you. So it's just such an incredible opportunity to have support and to learn and to find resources and to find a group of people that, you know, not only and like we were so lucky, everyone at the OCD Game Changer, except you, I had met at a conference and have kept up with. So now you're my new friend. So I get to see you in DC. Awesome. And that's so special to have that support and people that, you know, support each other.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's not because conferences can sometimes be scary and alienating, especially if someone has social anxiety. But the way I would describe it is it's not a conference, it's a community. Without sounding cliche or cheesy, you just feel at home, for want of a better phrase.
Yeah, it's just like a huge support group.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, cool. So what I'll do is in the show notes of this episode on my site, and obviously they can go to your site to find out more about the ISDF scholarship, Riley Scholarship. And so I got a question here, actually. So since you've started Riley's Wish, is it charity or foundation?
Foundation.
So since you started the foundation, I guess what have you learned that you didn't know before, you didn't realize was as much of an issue or anything like that? Anything that's kind of become more prominent for you since working more closely with other families and stuff?
I've learned there's more people than I thought out there that need help. I've learned there are also a lot of people that are willing to help, which always just humbles me when, you know, I'm not very good at asking for help. Mm-hmm. And that's been pretty special when somebody says, "What can I do to help you?" And I've had to say, "You know what, this is what I really need." So that's really been, it's been an eye-opening all the way around, because I've learned more about foundations and I've learned about nonprofits. And, you know, obviously, I mean, some nonprofits, they need a certain amount of money to keep, you know, and they have employee. Well, I don't have that. So I'm just, the money that I receive is so gracious from, you know, friends, family, people hear about it. And obviously the more financially we have, you know, the more I can put into these lectureships, the more I can look at those goals that I'd like to set to start other programs. I mean, that's obviously, you know, financially you have to have money to do those things.
Yeah.
But just raising awareness and educating, and, you know, social media now is huge in that you can share, which, you know, social media has its good and its bad, but it's been a great way for me to be able to share about Riley's Wish and about Riley. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. And like you said, like, obviously the going into the universities and stuff is a great initiative, and I know you'll achieve it, but just spreading the information is helping so many people more than anyone would ever think information could do. But it's the stepping stone of change and recovery. And, you know, it's so important.
That's what I saw also, was there were so many people that did not know really what OCD, you know, I'm so OCD, but after Riley's funeral, because Riley's funeral I set up is education and raise awareness. I wanted people to really know what this young man went through. And still to this day, people say that Riley's funeral taught me, and now people in their jobs and say, now they know what OCD. And so when somebody says it, you say, you know what? Let me really tell you what OCD is about. So, wow, that's like a chain of people telling people telling people. So
yeah,
if nothing else, that's going to make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. So how can people support Riley's Wish?
You know, a simple way, if you see it on social media, obviously share, because there'll be somebody maybe that's struggling with OCD and addiction, and they'll now have a resource. Hmm. So, because as you know, there's the stigma of mental health, there's a stigma of addiction. So the two together becomes very hard. So the more people, more it gets out there and more people talk about it, the more chances someone who's struggling will be able to get help. So that's, I mean, I think that's going to be huge. Obviously, like I just spoke about the financial piece of it, you know, donations to Riley's Wish just help us do more. And to tell Riley's story, you know, the young man in college who struggled with addiction but hid it, and struggled with OCD and hid it. Now, the more we talk about that, then the more I think it'll help others who are either struggling or a family, you know, the mom that says, I think that's what my child's struggling with.
Yeah.
And then they have resources to get help.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think it's also an important message, because you're talking about the college part there. So even if it's not OCD, it's addiction and depression, or addiction PTSD or bipolar or any other of the mental disorders.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So, no, thank you for that. And I will put all the links and stuff to Riley's Wish on my website. But I guess if anyone doesn't want to go to my website, it's just rileyswish.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, rileyswish.com.
Brilliant. All right, so a couple of questions now towards the end. So you can answer these, I guess, from an OCD and addiction standpoint, or you can just answer them generally. I'll leave it to you. But you've got a billboard in Georgia or Atlanta, somewhere like that. What do you want written on that billboard for the world to see?
Oh, wow.
That's the hardest question.
Yeah, that is a hard question. I mean, obviously, if it was Riley's Wish, you know, you can get help. You know, like we even talked about in Denver, if something happened to us today, have we helped people? And I think that's kind of at the end of the day, that's really what's important. So whether it be Riley's Wish, I'd love to see, you know, I'd love to see that, and then people could get help. Or all of our, you know, all there's so many great advocates that are helping people. You know, I wish we could each month we change, you know, so it's just it's rotating, because there's so many great advocates that are helping people, and I feel so grateful. I know a lot of them. So at the end of the day, wow, that's pretty neat. So yeah, I guess that, you know, caught me. I guess Riley's Wish, because then I could it would be able to help people, and probably a little bit of Riley's used to say, you know, don't judge people because you never know what's going on inside. I think that's so, he used to say Riley had empathy and he was so incredibly kind, and I learned, you know, I'm supposed to be teaching him that. He taught me so much about empathy and trying to understand somebody, and that was what he used to always say. You never know what's going on inside.
Yeah.
And I think that's in everyday life, when you meet somebody who, maybe they're angry or there's probably something, there's something going on in their life. And if you just stop and listen, you'd be amazed. They're not just angry. There's a reason.
I completely agree. I think that's very wise. I saw a quote by Heath Ledger today, who had an overdose. I think after filming Batman, because he was playing the Joker, and he said something about when you meet people, you ask them, are they married? What do they do for a living? What's their education? But no one ever asks you, are you happy?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That's so striking. Yeah.
How are you really doing?
Yeah.
You know, and that my life changed when I lost Riley. That I look at people different, because of Riley and what a tragedy. But it changed the way I look at people and maybe how I speak to people. Because everybody's got stuff and everybody's.
Yep.
And if you just stop and listen, it's that might change somebody's life right there, is just listening.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that's such a beautiful message, and it's a human one. You know, it's beyond mental health. It's beyond everything. It's what the world needs, and sadly, not always what the world gets. But I think if it did get that, things would be a lot easier for a lot of people, whether it's mental health or anything else.
I agree.
All right, excellent. I let's end it on that note, because I think that's a wonderful note to finish on. What I will say, is there anything else you want to mention that I haven't asked you or you want to share?
No, Stuart, I think you covered everything that I wanted to talk about and thank you for having me on and having me share Riley's story, and the more people I think that hear about Riley, and he was not just because I was his mom, but he was a pretty special young man that people were drawn to, and in that where he was, that he so struggled inside, but people were drawn to him because he was kind and he had empathy, and boy, did he listen. You should have seen his last conference when he did the first talk on OCD and substance abuse, and he had people lined up just to talk to him, and he sat for hours just talking to people and listening to their stories. He was a good listener.
I think that's one of the best testaments to someone's character is not, you can judge someone on how they treat people when times are good. But for me, the real mark of someone's character is how they treat people when times are bad. And as you said there, he was struggling, but yet he still found time to be compassionate for others.
Right, right. If we could all do that, the world would be a different place, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it starts with us and the listeners, so we can make a dent. All right,
and I think we made a dent in Denver. I think we started that, so I'm
a good event.
Thankful, and I'm excited.
Absolutely, and thank you so much for coming on. It means a lot to have you on, for you to share Riley's story and the work you're doing in OCD and addiction, because it's sadly not getting as much coverage as it deserves. So hopefully this, helps that.
Yes, and thank you, Stuart. Thank you for letting me share his story, and I hope it will help people. And they go to my site, my email's on there. They can certainly email, and I'd help them find resources if they need it, or I can listen.
Cool. Yeah, great offer. No, I appreciate it, and I'll put everything on the website. So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Margaret. If you want to support Riley's Wish or just find out more, head over to rileyswish.com. Also, everything mentioned will be in the show notes at theocdstories.com/podcast. Quick disclaimer, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy, and nor should it be. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Until we speak again, take care.